Oh, lovely. Thank you, Caroline. That was such a lovely introduction to the space and, really already creating a lot of the beauty that we can tune into in these really precious Sangha Live offerings. Yeah, I want to share a really warm welcome from my side and also just express how happy I am to be here with you, practicing the Dharma together. It's really lovely to see the welcoming comments in the chat as we gather here. And in case it's already not obvious, when we say, kind of welcome to all of us, welcome to everyone, we mean all parts of ourselves to feel welcomed to be here. As you'll notice, I called this session, getting free. I just want to say a couple of words about that before we dive into a meditation together, just because it might help just kind of frame some of the things as we have this exploration. So we have this words, oftentimes, especially if you just put two words together, there's so many ways we can interpret and get a sense of that. Getting free, getting as in getting it. Oh, I get it. I get an understanding. What is freedom? What does freedom feel like? What does freedom look like? What would developing a path be like there? And there's also this sense of getting, as in getting there, actually arriving, getting, becoming more free. Perhaps we can have a sense of endlessly becoming more free. And that's there in the subtitle, the infinite middle of the middle way, something endlessly becoming more free. And the middle way, so many ways we could express this. What is this? Really at the heart of the teachings, but also very, very subtle, very, very subtle. Think of it tonight as the middle way is an expression of equanimity, an interesting word, and we'll say a lot more about it and maybe how difficult it is to say a lot more about it later on. But seeing that as the equanimity of the heart that is well balanced, the heart that is expansive, the heart that doesn't push and pull on experience, isn't entangled. Okay. So, as I say, we're going to have a meditation. And I just want to say something because I don't want to be really kind of too surprising in the meditation when I talk about something that may be a little bit distracting from the calmness of the meditation. So, I don't know if this seems will sound weird to anyone or if it's just like, oh, yeah, of course, that's how it goes. Normally, when we operate as a human being, we tend to think about the world out there and I'm over here experiencing it. Yeah, and the world is exterior to me. In meditation or at any particular time, we can shift that sense of consciousness and realize that everything that's out there, everything that's appearing out there is actually appearing in this consciousness. This exterior, whatever you're seeing, a computer in front of you, a window, a house, things, they're appearing in your consciousness. Yeah. So I didn't want to just drop that in the middle of the meditation. It might, oh, hang on, what? And there certainly very likely is a world out there. And I guess we'll never fully know because everything we sense, we feel, we imagine, we love, everything that exists, everything that has meaning for us is there in attentive consciousness. Right? Not meaning anything dismissive about the world, as we're saying. It's just a way of noticing, ah, this is all happening in consciousness. And this is a middle way, in a sense. We're not saying something definitive about life, but about our way of experiencing it, right? And the freeing possibilities there is we can change the atmosphere of that knowing space from, say, from greediness, get more of those things out there, or aversion, get it off, get it away from here. And we can switch to something more like metta, welcoming to arise. Welcome all of this, this appearance, welcoming it to arise, allowing it to be. And also releasing it to go in peace, to go in peace. So let's have a meditation. Let's have half an hour for some practice together. We're really related to this exploration of the middle way. So a real invitation for you to choose what's going to be a good posture for you that kind of speaks of that quality. to be equipoised, to be well balanced or balancing, to be alive, to be sensitive. Give yourself time to get into that posture. Finding yourself in the body, if the body is an accessible realm to be sensitive to. If not, maybe relaxing into the present, listening to sound, they arise and pass. And start simple, start right here in this moment, maybe just the very beginnings of the breath. Noticing the sounds that are arising and passing. It's going to take a little few minutes just to set the scene and then leave you to freely explore your own practice. Noticing the beginnings of this in-breath, really sensitive to the beginnings, and maybe just ease off after that, just allowing the breath to flow. Imagine we really want to notice again the beginnings of the next in-breath. And the rest of the breath just flowing by. We see how these degrees of intensity we can bring to attention. Really intense, really hardly there at all, really relaxed. What's the middle point there for you that's just right, not too intense, not too gentle, that allows you to be with a whole breath all the way through, not squeezing it, not compressing it, also not losing it. Of course, we can do the same thing with sounds, that we're holding the space of the listening quite wide. It's almost as if maybe sounds or breath sensations are just landing on the being, just coming towards us. We just receive them. Another way, we're kind of going out, searching, noticing that's arising, that's passing, that's happening. So again, finding your own middle way, and with the breath, with sounds, wherever you're working, you'll notice needs to be dynamic. Maybe the in-breath is very alive, very present. Maybe that pause between the in-breath, the out-breath, you actually need more intensity there. And then the flow of the out-breath, again, just ease off the intensity. It's naturally attended to, and then the gap. Intensity, notice. I want to notice the beginning of the next in-breath. Don't want to get lost. So just invite you to play with that, finding your middle, finding what's appropriate for you. Encourage you very slowly, if you have been distracted, coming into the present moment. So that feeling of gathering body, heart, mind into the present moment. No sense of blame if you've been wandering in distraction, mind wandering. This is a moment of being present. We relax into that, allow that, enjoy it even. Maybe if there's any tension in the face, can invite that to relax. In the shoulders, relaxing, easing. Supporting, maybe just rolling the hips forward, support more space in the belly, adjusting the posture, give more space in the heart. Little things can make a difference. While being present, just enjoying being sensitive and getting that middle approach, that middle way to the attention. How intense is the attention on the breath that works for you? Maybe you can sustain for three breaths through the whole process. The more we do these three breaths, each time you come back, relax, try another three breaths. It starts to steady us in what we might start to think of as equanimity. Present, sensitive, balancing. Right, a sense of slowly resting more and more into the present moment. The present moment is distracted or agitated or whatever it is, just letting that unfold, not being reactive. This present moment, getting in tune with how it is in the body, how the conscious, attentive awareness is revealing this moment, bringing to life this moment. Also, in a certain way, the present isn't even a moment, it's a flow of existence, and we can come closer and closer, almost as if we're getting more and more to the middle, not leaning ahead into the future, not dragging ourselves into the past. Incline in the posture, and maybe we need to lean back, lean forwards, just to get that sense of being equipoised in the present moment as it unfolds. That may also open something, energize something as we get more and more present, just exploring if there's something there for you. Time and again, just resting into the heart of the present moment, trying not to incline into future moments, past moments. Maybe that's the breath still unfolding here, maybe it's something, the sounds, just opening. And have a spirit, a sense of like an open palm. It's helpful. You can even turn over the palms, open the palms to remind ourselves that the attention is like an open palm now. We're not pushing, we're not pulling. Everything is welcomed to appear, allowed to be here, and also released, not held on to. Welcomed to arise, allowed to remain, released in peace. Coming into the last few minutes. Not rushing to be present, not trying to stop everything, just slowing down the push, the pull. Maybe exploring or rediscovering the heart of the present. If you enjoy that open palm attention, not pushing, not pulling on the appearances in conscious attention, or rather welcoming, allowing, releasing. As an act of kindness. As an expression of freedom. So just inviting you to transition from the stillness practice to listening part, and I'll share a short reflection on what we're exploring here, in a sense. There's a interesting tension in Dharma practice, Dharma theory, the ideas that we have here. We want something understandable, achievable, something we can put into practice here and now, for a sense of freedom we can follow, and get a sense for and unfold. Buddha also offered us something that's kind of way beyond what we normally can understand and achieve. In what he described, an experience, if we can call it that, beyond language that isn't actually an experience. This nibbana, this kind of free that we're talking about. So what I hope we were uncovering in the meditation, and maybe kind of opened up new experiences or ways of being, and that would be lovely. That would be kind of what I'm hoping for. Opening up a few different kind of middle ways that we can have in our practice. We can have the middle way of adjusting our effort level. Speak a bit more about that in a moment. Can have a middle way between the rush, the getting, the getting rid of the activity there, and maybe there's a middle way there between that and just stopping, not doing anything, non-doing, but actually somewhere in between. It's kind of a slowing down and opening out, being sensitive, that urge to be in the future or in the past that we often feel in our hearts and minds, you know, the planning or the reflection, that middle space of the present moment, yeah, which maybe isn't even a moment. It doesn't mean so much maybe to speak of it as a moment, this reflection there. And then what I like to call metta in all three time frames, yeah. Metta being the quality of kindness and care we can bring to a moment, the welcoming in as it comes in, the being present with it and allowing it to express, giving attention to it. And giving attention to someone or something or anything is an act of kindness. Welcoming something to appear is an act of kindness, metta, kindness, and allowing it, releasing it, letting it go. Also a great act of kindness. So the Buddha would say, I teach the middle way. Yeah, and this is a middle way between extremes. Okay, now, which I alluded to in the short essay you were invited to have a look at. Don't worry if you didn't. If you want to, you can look at it later. But what I alluded to in that essay is, of course, that it's very subtle. It's actually subtle beyond subtle. And this was actually a reflection that the Buddha had about this. It's like, is anyone going to get this? It's so subtle. It's profound beyond profound. Yeah, not easy to see. And of course, you know, then we need some pointing out and creativity to reveal what this path is and also to unravel, to untangle, you know, habits of heart and mind. I may have shared this before in the Sangha Live sessions. I have a musician I really like to listen to. He's a jazz guitarist called Wayne Krantz. Very, very interesting music. And he worked as a session musician, or he would go and, you know, work in other bands. And he was working with a particular band. The name escapes me, quite a famous band. And they said to him, you know, they wanted him to play on the beat. You know, there's kind of various styles of music. You can play ahead of the beat and it gives a kind of excitement kind of feeling. Or you could play behind the beat and it gives this kind of lazy, laid back kind of sounds. Yeah. Sounds we'll be familiar with in the music that we've heard. And they said, no, we want you to play on the middle of the beat. And he said, I am playing on the middle of the beat. And they said, no, there's a middle inside the middle of the beat. We want you to play there. The middle of the middle of the beat. You know, and it's that kind of degree of sensitivity that can be helpful sometimes when we're exploring the middle way. You say, oh, there's a middle here, but actually maybe there's a middle to the middle. And that increase in sensitivity can actually be a wonderful way of seeing this. There's a subtlety here. And sometimes we stop too soon, think, yeah, I am in the middle. I'm playing on the beat, whatever it is, you know, I'm in the present moment, and say, oh, actually, is there more here? Is there more? So that's one side of the way we could envision this exploration of the Dharma. Another is actually to see more and more middle ways, more and more middle ways. Okay. And maybe it's going to be useful for us to actually conceive more middlenesses that we can work within. So the Buddha says the middle way between extremes. And are there things that we think of as actually being binary options? You know, I'm distracted or I'm undistracted. You know, I'm making effort or I'm not making effort. And we can actually take these binaries and we can turn them into ranges. We could turn them into spectrums, which is the word one of my favorite teachers, Rob Bebert, would use. You know, seeing things as spectrums, seeing the sense of self as a spectrum, seeing a sense of dukkha as a spectrum. It's not we're in dukkha, we're out of dukkha, but there's ranges, there's fadings, there's increasing intensities of dukkha, of stress, distress. And there's a fading and a quietening of that. Very useful, very skillful thing to do. I can remember a long time ago, my ears really pricked up when I heard Christopher Titmus, another Dharma teacher, who shared, you know, there's no such thing as balance. You know, this middle of a middle, you know, it's not a balanced, you're not a balanced being. He said, you look in the world, there's no such thing as balance. That's a really interesting idea. But for us, of course, there's also a real importance to learn the skill of balancing. Yeah. And one of the ways I would express that is that the skill of balancing is to see the spectrum in the binary, not the one and the zero, but this gradation, and learn the skill to play along it, And one of the ones that Rob Bebea would like to share about, and I think we were using in our practice a little bit here, is around effort. Yeah, seeing effort as a spectrum. And the way I interpret this, and maybe he shared it this way, I can't quite remember, is always having our finger on the dial of effort. You know, like we're like a sound engineer at the mixing desk of experience, and just tuning it up, tuning it down, yeah? Getting it right for this moment. Such an urge to say, well, I'll just set it on 5. It's a 0 to 10 scale. I set it on 5. That's the middle way, right? But no, we need sometimes, let's say, you know, something's really, really quiet. We might need to increase that intensity, the interest that we bring through there. Yeah. So actually, effort has many modes as well. Yeah. We might need to make an effort at times to do less. I say, I really have to not do so much, not fill the space with so much words, not try and get my way. Yeah, something it's like, oh, less. The effort to do less. The effort to bring more sensitivity, to get to know, to ask questions. Yeah, the effort maybe to really dive into something, get devoted, get dedicated, get passionate. Another time might be the effort to get more receptive, get more open, to get less engaged, involved, however it is. There's lots and lots of different modes. And so, of course, it's not also just effort in a sense. Yeah, you can really leave it wide open, like what is the middle way I need to find for me in this moment. You know, we spoke about this, not rushing, not stopping, something slowing down, paying attention, opening the heart and mind. Yeah. So there's a middle way with this too, right? We can take the middles from the Buddha Dharma, ones that we can hear about, these what we might now call conventional teachings, for actually a very unconventional sense of freedom, an unconventional way of being, but they've become a convention. So we can take from there, take those middle ways. But we may also find a lot of fruit in seeing previously undeclared middles, yeah, things that weren't thought of as middles before. And there's also kind of middle ways between the middle ways. Yeah, but any middle you can conceive of, there's a this and a that. And in that deepening, expanding, widening. But there's a middle way here, as I was saying. We don't want to feel that the middle ways are fixed and there's only these ones and no others. And we also don't want to get lost in constantly finding something else to do, to explore. We actually want to get skillful in our practice. And I also want this talk actually to be skillful in trying to dance between the middle of these middles as eloquently and as fully as we have the time to, yeah, without landing on extremes and without playing too kind of fast and loose either. Yeah. And so the idea I had for this session is to talk about two descriptions of the fading of tanha, thirsting, demanding, which you may notice is the phrase often translated as craving, and kind of sits there in the second noble truth. What's happening when there's dukkha, when there's distress, when there's suffering, when there's anxieties, when there's agitation in the being? Oh, there's some thirsting after, there's some craving, some demanding on experience. Yeah. And so the fading of tanha is also kind of the fading of dukkha, the opening of freedom. So these are often translated as equanimity, and we have tatra majhatata, to be there in the middleness of existence. Yeah, a sense of being equally touched by all things. Right, so we're lessening this craving, this demanding, this thirsting, and we're there in the middleness of existence. We might feel that in that present moment. Things are arising, things are passing. Yeah. That word tatra, to be there, yeah, with respect to the appearances that come. And the majhatata, the middleness. And it's kind of equipoise. kind of literally means majha, the middle, and then tata, to stand, or to take a poise, to pose, to be there. So there in the middleness, really beautiful, really helpful, really fruitful way of practicing. There's another word that's used in the teachings for equanimity, which has such a another beautiful opening way of expressing freedom, is upekkha, upekkha, to look over without being disturbed. It speaks of stillness beyond stillness. It speaks of a remarkable peacefulness. And interestingly, by having that peaceful, still kind of quality, it actually steals the appearance of the world. Okay? So it has like a quite a different flavor for me as a phrase, yeah? Because we have the tatra majhatata there in the middleness of existence as it's appearing, yeah? And upekkha, this kind of steady, somewhat impartial view of the world of appearances, that because it doesn't have so much tanha, doesn't create so much dukkha, but actually also starts to fade appearances. So it turns out, as we explore this part of the path, that appearances themselves are dependent on craving, dependent on some push and pull to hold them into attention for them to appear. Right? And I think it's beautiful to have both of these aspects there in, and alive and beautiful there, expressing the path for us. Right? These are not mutually exclusive. It's not that you have to pick one or the other. Some might feel they want to pick one or the other, and that's fine with me. You can pick one or the other. You might feel more drawn to this. They might both express in your life. Neither might appeal to you. That's all absolutely fine. Yeah. We're finding our own middle way, perhaps, in the midst of all of this. But there might be times where we lean into one and the other one just isn't possible, of course, if we fade the appearances of the world, yeah, by that non-push and pull. Equipoise doesn't mean anything. It doesn't make sense to be in the middle of something that's completely faded and disappeared. And on the other sense, if we want to be there in the middleness, it doesn't make sense to be fading those things. So we want to be calm, steady in the midst of difficulty. And probably at different times, different things will be needed for us. Some will be only available in the most deep meditative experiences. Yeah, this upekkha, fading of all things. Mindfulness, as it's often described, is a real kind of there in the middleness with what is being fabricated, what is being conditioned into appearance, yeah, in this conscious mind and heart. And I'm back in Israel again, and I can remember about 20 years ago, really feeling this kind of there in the middleness aspect. There was quite a lot of violence happening, and we were starting a peace walk. And we decided to do this peace walk, and we had the good fortune of having Yanai Posselnick to come and you know, guide the peace walk as a Dharma expression. And another Dharma teacher, name dropping Dharma teachers this evening for some reason. And we were starting off the peace walk, and there was a really loud explosion. A bomb had gone off just at the corner of the street, and we were very concerned that no one had been hurt, and hoping it wasn't harmful to anyone at all, you know, any being at all in any way that it could have caused harm. And of course, you know, a lot of harm was happening, a lot of misunderstandings, a lot of agitation that we can get in our existence. And we wanted peace. We wanted peace. And we were thinking, okay, we're going off to do this peace walk. We'd actually gone to a lot of effort, not me personally, the organizers of it, to make sure that we didn't have to have armed guards. That was kind of one of the requirements. And it was, oh, we're doing a peace walk. We don't want to have people walking with guns with us and protecting us as we're trying to do this peace. And we're also making clear this was understood. Every village we're going to, it's a peaceful place that we want to be creating, and we're coming in peace, we're coming unarmed. And of course, we're going to villages where some might see us as an enemy, from the other side. Extreme views will be there. Some will love that we're coming, some will not love that we're coming. And I suddenly really kind of struck home as we were kind of talking about this, and it's like, yes, they know that we're coming, and we're not armed, and we can't protect ourselves in any way. Like, there's nothing protecting ourselves. Is this naive? Am I being naive? Am I being stupid? Am I risking my life? And it came quite quickly, this sense, there in the middleness, what else am I going to do with my life? What would be the point of having a life if I just wanted to protect it, if I didn't actually follow through to the things that are meaningful for me or for us collectively, like peace? And in the reflection of it, I recall, this book from my adolescence that a friend had, probably like sitting in the toilet, like many great books are. You know, share your great books with people by leaving them in the toilet. Just remember the spine of this book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And I kind of turn over this phrase, anyway, or any way, or in the middle way, a new way, a discovery. Feel the fear and do it anyway. And just to draw this story to a close, it ends as Tom Paine very famously said, the worst things in my life never happened. The worst things I imagined were going to happen, never happened. So it all went perfectly well, and it was a beautiful introduction to the peace communities of Israel and Palestine, both sides, really inspiring what they have available to work with. And because of that, I think it also deepened my Dharma practice, deepened my understandings, opened avenues for discovering new ways to practice, and also new ways to deepen insights. Let's see, what happens in those moments? When I reach beyond my conditioning, what happens to the way that the conditioned appearances occur? The Buddha would speak about all appearances are conditioned. Particularly, we might want to reflect, conditioned by the state of the heart and mind, conditioned by the consciousness in the moment and over time. And so the Buddha is saying here, what when I do it leads to long-term well-being, happiness, freedom? How is this moment affected? How could it be affected differently? And particularly at the heart of this, how is the push and pull on life? How is the getting rid of appearing in this moment? Is there a middle way between that, between pushing, between pulling, that isn't a disappearing, isn't a giving up, isn't a rejection? Different ways to express. A middle way, an invitation, neither pushing too hard nor pulling away, to not demand, but also not disengage. Get that sense of balancing. It's not a balanced position, it's a balancing, it's an art. It takes skill, it takes effort. And in the meditation, I think we were using that through this kind of metta, like a modality of attending. Three time frames of experience, welcoming to arise, allowing to be here, releasing. And that's just one middle, one middle between the gross push and pull. And what you may notice in that moment of holding that space, there must also be a midpoint between the extremes, push and pull. But even there's a midpoint between the subtlety of welcoming, allowing, releasing, how I welcome, how I allow, how I release. There's a new middle there to explore. The intensity, the non-intensity, when the practice is getting dull, maybe in that space, we can dive beneath the waves of the agitated mind, but underneath we notice there's another current here. How do we work with that current? How much do we go with it? How much do we push against it? How much do we encourage it? Metta as a practice is described as endless, boundless, opening, illimitable, expansive. And perhaps all of the Dharma is this way. All of it's this way. So there's always so much more that can be said in any aspect of our exploration. But one of these aspects, and just to kind of draw this to the close and open for some questions, just to say, perhaps there's not just one middle way. And it's actually possible in every possible realm we can imagine, we can see it's a range, a spectrum of possibilities, and find our place there in the middleness. Between perhaps a sense of discipline. To practice is to be disciplined. But also, we want to have space maybe for creative intuition in the practice, finding that middle way between discipline and being undisciplined, but actually creating a spectrum there that's disciplined or intuitive. How much I stick with this and how much I make little adjustments. How do we play in that middle there? A middleness between maybe being careless or being careful. Actually finding different ways of caring. How we relate to understanding. Maybe we don't like ideas, don't like concepts. So we reject those. Maybe we don't like fantasies of the mind. We don't want any of that. We don't want distractions. How do we work in our way? What opens the midpoints for us? What opens our sense of freedom? Okay, so we'll open for some questions here, and please feel invited to put questions in the question box and all of this. It'd be really lovely to make this more and more relevant to your life, to your practice. Maybe there are some aspects you feel it'd be helpful to dive into more. Just before we do that, I just want to once again mention my deep appreciation for Sangha Life for offering these sessions and the beauty of offering them on Dana. That we have these opportunities to feel that everyone is welcome here. Everyone is able to come, to participate. And of course, it's not free to run these sessions for them. It's not without cost. And so, if you're in a position where you're able to give support, I really deeply appreciate that. And as you'll know, I also receive from there. I receive some portion of the Dana for holding this session in this way. So deep appreciation for that. And are there any questions that you would like to bring into the space? I'm very welcome. And I'll treat the questions which are upvoted the most. Okay, so any guidance for working with anxiety would be appreciated. Yeah, absolutely. Working with anxiety is, probably, a really core issue for many people. And, the more that we get close to and sensitive and subtle with our experience, we can feel more anxiety and less anxiety at different times. So there are ways of understanding it and ways of working with it, and some of them will be useful and be kind of Dharma focused, we could say, and others might be it might be more useful to step outside of a Dharma framework and get help in therapeutic situations and treat our condition of anxiety if it gets chronic in multiple kind of ways. So I'm not a Dharma extremist. So I think there's a middle way here, and the middle way also includes not using the Dharma for everything. Not that it has to be that way. So it could include, like going for walks in nature and spending time with friends. doing physical activity, that maybe that's what helps. Yeah, so we involve, be creative with what works for us. Therapy, of course, is another modality. Even medication might be very helpful for many of us. So just to say, the middle way includes all of that. But from a Dharma perspective, we can look at, how is my anxiety being conditioned in this moment? And one of the ways it actually expresses, it expresses through my body. How do I know that there's anxiety here? How do I feel it? How am I actually meeting the sense of anxiety in this moment? What would happen if the anxiety was a little bit more welcomed, allowed, and also released? And we'd practice that with other things, which are a little bit easier to work with at first. Yeah, so it's like a sound. We work with neutral sounds. We could work with slightly more annoying sounds. We even work with sounds that, I definitely don't like this sound, but I also welcome it, allow it, release it. And so we're working through that sensibility and see, what would it be like to meet an anxiety feeling there, or the sensations of anxiety in that moment? So we would call that kind of attentional fabrication. I call that attentional fabrication. Some might call that mental fabrication. How we relate through the atmosphere of consciousness in that moment to the experience of anxiety. Okay, because there's anxiety and there's the experience of anxiety. And the experience of anxiety maybe can be conditioned differently. As another way that we can understand how this experience is conditioned, if we feel it in the body, what would it be like if I breathe deeply? Okay, now I'm not rejecting, this isn't a tactic to get rid of it. So that's why I started off with the welcoming, allowing, releasing kind of sensibility. But now I'm gonna breathe deeply with it. So it's a slightly different way that we might think about, you know, this anxiety is a distraction in my meditation. It's keeping me away from being present with the breath. Bring the breath to be present with this. Bring the breath to be present with this. As we experience, as the experience unfolds, breathing deeply, relaxing through the body. The anxiety must be conditioned by the body in some ways. And if we can change the conditioning in the body, we can change the anxiety experience as it unfolds in some ways, some of the time. Yeah. So ongoing exploration, really deep and beautiful question, but it can be part of our middle way path. Is this working with the anxiety, finding how it expresses, finding how we can rest it, how we can release it in different ways. Okay, I'm just gonna have a little sip of water. So I hope that's helpful. And, you know, I really, really hope that you find helpful ways to work with that. Okay, that was from Mudita Karuna, lovely, beautiful name, joy and compassion. And this is from Rachel, which is also a lovely, beautiful name. I wonder if you can talk a bit more about not being in balance, please. This is the second time I've heard this recently, and I would like to focus a bit more and understand this. So it's... yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Language is just so rich, and I just kind of feel myself diving into a sense of what it means to balance, to bring to balance. The way I heard this phrase and the way I kind of understand it is to move from kind of grammatically not quite sure what it would be, but like balance, almost as if it's a thing, to balancing as it's an activity. The way I think about the Dharma is its ways of relating. We're bringing different ways of relating, and we're hopefully bringing ways of relating and having a relationship with this and that, people, beings, sounds, sensations, appearances, existence itself, different ways of relating that bring more sense of freedom. And so there's a balancing of lots and lots of conditions to give rise to more freedom. Okay, but freedom's not something fixed, right? And as we bring in something more, then we're changing different conditions. So we have this anxiety and we want to bring it to more calmness, but then we might get so calm and relaxed and whatever, we might fade away and just fall asleep. but maybe we wanted to be awake with our experience. So we need perhaps a certain degree of stress, even anxiety, is almost, you know, to be engaged with experience. So there's this balancing rather than get balanced, rather than this sense there's somewhere fixed in all of this that I fix myself to. And I think it would be not as nice as we might imagine to be fixed and balanced in one's position, rather than it being alive and balancing, dynamic and creative, with that mixture of discipline, intuition, that mixture of effort and effortlessness, that mixture of kindness and allowing, and also a mixture of the intensity of like, this is what I'm going for, and I'm dedicated and devoted and single-minded. Yeah. So we want to have the creativity, the fluidity, so that our practice and our life express all of that. That's what I feel for myself, you know. Okay, so I just want to say, you know, a lot of these questions are always going to be better than the answers, yeah? And it's kind of like we're diving into something. What does it mean for me? Why am I, you know, probably heard a lot of things, but it's, you know, as you mentioned in the question, I've heard this. The second time I've heard this recently, and I'd like to focus a bit more and understand this, then don't just take my answer as like, oh yeah, now I get it. That for me would be a shame, and I don't imagine that you'll do that, but it's like, okay, what does it mean? Why do I want to be balanced, or why would I want to be balancing? What does it mean? How does it appear for me? Yeah. Okay. So I hope that's helpful. So Nick Russell here is sharing, I've had periods when I practice more and other times when I practice less. I've struggled with this in the past, feeling when I disengage with my practice is not good enough. If it really is okay to adjust the dial of our effort towards our practice up and down, how can we know if we're practicing as well as we could? Yeah, so it's a really beautiful question, and it kind of actually touches into something very deep for us, which is, how do we know that we're getting more free? How do we know when we're not engaging enough? You know, now the real kind of key in the question here that kind of stands out is that feeling as I disengage that my practice is not good enough. If that's the sense, how much would be good enough? Because sometimes this is just a mind state, yeah? It's not good enough. If I practiced for every hour of the day, would it be good enough? Would life be good enough? And it might be that we need to practice a sense of this is good enough and I'm gonna do more, yeah? So that we're not doing it because it's not good enough. We're actually doing it because there's more available for us. There's more possibilities here. Sometimes we're also not practicing in ways which are actually fulfilling for us. So we spoke about a few different ways we can play with fabrication and conditioning. And it might be helpful to just think a little bit in different ways. Yesterday I was teaching something in the Guy House Online Dharma Hall around the middle way between distractedness and undistractedness. Maybe I already mentioned that mildly here. And I thought the middle way is being gathered. To be distracted, the etymology of that, is to be pulled apart, to be drawn apart. And we get that feeling. To be distracted, it's body, heart, mind, they're off in a different space. Bodies here, sorry, heart and mind are off in a different space, different time, different location in a sense, yeah. Coming back here to body, bringing heart and mind into the body, bringing the body to heart and mind, that feeling of being gathered. And if we lean into that, we'll actually see it's much more enjoyable to be present, yeah. And so as I practice, I can actually practice enjoying being present. So I'm actually using my effort to be more gathered. Okay. I'm using my effort maybe to breathe more deeply, to soothe, to calm, to release. So all of these ways and sentiments can start to actually change the framework. Oh, my practice is good enough. I'm creating freedom in this moment of being present and I'm enjoying it. Yeah, we're not so much in the inclination, perhaps, to give ourselves a hard time. And that actually opens up the potential and possibilities for diving into the practice a little bit more. Now, all of that said, might give a feeling is like, oh, and I wasn't doing that well enough either. And, you know, and that for many of us is a pattern, is a way of relating to our experience. You know, we don't feel good enough about not feeling good enough, about not appearing to be good enough in this moment. So what would make this good enough? And can we just allow for that possibility? It is good enough to show up this much. Yeah. And if it doesn't feel good enough, is there some more way that I want to do that? And so within that can also be lots and lots of different ways to frame and express our practice. Yeah. So maybe we include something, you know, maybe we wash up at home. Yeah, we wash the dishes and things like that. Could that become part of my practice? So that I feel like I'm actually doing enough practice. Maybe brushing my teeth as an act of care and mindfulness and presence as I live my life, other activities that I do, yeah. So that they all feel like they're part of this life of practice, part of this continuity of being present, part of this development of a middle way, yeah, that expresses the freedom and well-being that we wish to live in. Okay, so again, I hope it's helpful. Hope you also feel encouraged to find your own way, to find your own expression. So we have a question about sleepiness, which from John, saying, which I often experience when practicing at 7 p.m. on a Sunday. It feels like the effort dial doesn't have its full range of movement, limiting what is available to me. The struggle itself is tiring, but without effort, I feel like I'm going to drift away. Where might I look for the middle? Beautiful question, John. I really know what you mean. And, you know, there are times where, you know, it's not the best time for me personally to practice. Yeah. And maybe, you know, on the one hand, okay, that's fine. So either I'm sleepy and I haven't got the full range and that, and other times I'm going to practice and it's going to be easier and better for me. The other side is, yeah, I want to practice. I want to be awake in all time frames of existence, not just, you know, early in the morning and late at night, middle of the day. I want the availability to be as present as I can be here. You're absolutely right that the struggle in the practice is tiring, right? But without the effort, I feel like I'm going to drift away. Where might I look for the middle? And of course, you know, you're absolutely right there. So struggle is dukkha. Struggle is stress. Yeah. Not making any effort, drifting away, is also dukkha. It's not being present. It's not being gathered. So where might I look for the middle? So what would make you feel more awake? Yeah. So if we look at experiences, it's fabricated in a number of ways. One of the really key ways before we get to the heart and the mind and, you know, making micro adjustments there is actually to change something in the posture. So when I feel sleepiness, I stand up. I do my practice standing up. I do my practice a little bit too cold. I do my practice, and as I'm doing it, you know, I make sure that I feel I am awake, alive, present. So maybe I do it outside. Maybe I do it with a layer off, you know, so all of the things that might give the impression this is sleepiness time, I give the impression back through the body, through the posture, that this is being awake time. Yeah, you can hold a hand up in a sense at a certain time there. No, this is me being present, making that effort. And the interesting thing is that the posture itself doesn't express struggle. I'm taking a stand for the present moment, standing up for what I really wish to be, which is more awake, more present, more alive. And then we can use some of the mental faculties here, which is to feel myself coming more alive, to feel myself standing tall, to feel the space above, around, to feel even the consciousness brightening in this moment, and we become more awake. So if you can just imagine for yourself in this moment, that sense of the whole body is actually bright and alive and vital, expressing existence. And it comes up the spine, into the head, and out up the top. It's just almost like a fountain of brightness here in this moment. And as we do that, yes, I'm awake, I'm alive, and we can bring it in. So the effort isn't like effort, the making of effort as we might normally express it, but it's actually this effort to be here, which isn't as effortful as we might imagine. So we're not using a lot of energy in the struggle side of things, but we're also opening the channels, opening the space, use the body, and then start using the heart and the mind to dive into that range of possibilities. Yeah. So a few minutes left. Welcome to add in any more questions. I see there's one here by Jitu. I hope I'm getting names, pronunciations quite close. Can you talk about the peace work you guys are doing? Yes, happy to speak about that. The project that we have coming up shortly is a retreat that we've been doing since 2006. So you can visit sanghasava.org. I think there's probably a link in my bio on the Sangha Live website. But Seva is spelled S-E-V-A, and it's Sangha, like Sangha Live, sanghasava.org. You can visit, oh, thank you, it's appeared in the chat. We have a retreat coming up. We call it Being Peace. You may know, sense, imagine the possibility that our meditation practice can develop a sense of peacefulness, a sense of calm, a sense of capacity to meet all that is difficult in our experience. And we can hold that space for that. And so the concept of this retreat is to say, what if we brought that meditative skill and we went into an area of conflict, an area of difficulty, yeah, and actually stayed calm, stayed sensitive. And so there's a few aspects to the retreat. We have silent meditation days, and you would recognize them from meditation retreats, Sangha Live sessions, all of that kind of aspect. But we're also going into dialogue, into conversation. We invite Israelis and Palestinians to come together, international groups when we're less restricted by COVID, in who we can invite to come here to participate in hearing the stories from all sides. Yeah, and we hold that space, that meditative space that can listen deeply. One of my favorite phrases for like, what's meditation? What's this meditation thing you guys are doing? You know, some people ask me. I say it's listening, it's deep listening, it's deep listening. And that's why we need to be quiet at times, so that we can really deeply listen. But then we can bring that across and we can really deeply listen to another, the condition of their life, the way that they're living, what's going on for them. Listen even if they get angry, listen if they blame us, listen if they're disappointed, listen if they're sad, and holding that space. And then also responding in what we think is a skillful way, a middle way, that helps open the space, open the dialogue, deepen the connection. The other aspect is we actually do a social, supportive, engaged, and environmental work. So it's not just here with Being Peace. We have other retreats in Europe and elsewhere. In this one, we're actually doing olive harvesting at the same time. Yeah. So we actually do an activity alongside the Palestinians to support their economy, support their independence, support their freedom to look after themselves. So we go along, we pick olives. And of course, that also gives us an opportunity to have conversations in a more relaxed way. We're out in the field, we're sharing food, and those who eat together connect together in deeper ways, as many of us will know. And so then we bring in our meditation, meditate while I'm picking an olive tree, meditate while I'm having a conversation, meditate while I'm enjoying the kids running around and all of that. And so that's kind of part of what we're doing. Lots and lots of ways we can express this middle way. Yeah, lots and lots of ways we can express the freedom of our hearts and minds. And so it's been a real delight for me to be here with the Sangha Live community on this Sunday evening. And I hope all sleepiness will evaporate into brilliant, bright senses of freedom. And for those for whom it's morning, have a beautiful day. And for those of you who are heading to sleep, may you rest well and wake bright and full of life. Thank you.